Blog Talk Radio.
Can you hear me? Can anybody hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Is that Claudie?
Yes.
Oh, good. So we were having a little bit of trouble with the modern technology to start the show. So I guess we're on.
All right. Can you hear me, Tim?
Yep. It's all working now.
Okay, but I'm going to hang up the phone because I'm using my phone and see if the computer picks it up. So if it doesn't, I'm going to call back on the phone. But,
yeah.
And then, is Claudie, can you hear us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, she's on. Okay. I'm going to hang up the phone and see if I'm on.
Yeah. Seems like so many things are going on unseen. It's amazing to even get a glimpse of all the secret activity, it seems like, that is taking place in this material place.
Okay, yeah, I'm on. I have to use the phone, I just realized. Unless I call in as the host, I have to use the phone. So, but we're on. Our guest is nowhere to be seen. This week, we'll have to reschedule. She was Lorian Fenton. Kelsey and Henry and I met her at in March at the UFO conference in Laughlin, Nevada, and she's a promoter. She has her own talk show host, radio show, The Fenton Perspective. She has, like I say, it says on here on the in her bio, she's after almost dying from the swine flu in 2009, she had a near-death experience, which propelled her into doing the work she loves in the community, which is the UFO community where she works right now, promoting the shows and doing interviews and talking about UFOs. But since she's not on today, well, that's all you're going to get from her, apparently. And so we're going to have our own show here with Claudie, Tim, and I. So go for it if you have anything to share. Otherwise, I have something too. Go, Tim.
Well, I was just becoming aware of how much stuff is going on that's not seen or called secret here in this earth place. It just seems like so much is not known about what's really taking place with this stuff from aliens and artificial intelligence seemingly affecting us humans in a lot of ways that we have no idea that we're being affected by them. It's just all amazing that the way it seems to be, when it seems like it could have been much different to have been on a planet where there weren't wars or starvation or disease or all these things that seem to be making mankind suffer. It's just a place that it seems like it's not where I'd want to return to if I had the choice to not come back, except that a person would want to be somewhere better. And then we to find somewhere better seems almost like unless there's someone that is guiding to some place better, how could anyone ever find any place better? And why do these aliens and beings from different places in this psych realm or material place have a desire to cause us to be like slaves to them or living off of us like vampires and all these tap line things about draining our energy subconsciously. We don't even know they're doing it with our emotions and through all these sports games and through the wars and all different ways that most of the masses don't seem to be aware of at all, that by being involved this way in these giant get-togethers and rock concerts and football games and basketball games and baseball games and soccer games and all these things that we think are so important are actually affecting us in ways that we wouldn't want to be affected if we knew what was really going on. It's just becoming aware is very, very important. It seems like that is about the most important thing that we're here on Earth to find out what life's all about and why we came here and what the big picture is. So we have
yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, so, I agree, Tim. The scope of this, the distortion is just, the more you become aware, the more it becomes bigger, the scope of this entrapment that we're in. Just pretty amazing, but at least we have an out. And I think it was you that read from book 6 last night about the is gave us imagination, you know, to use as a tool to move outside the literal mind initially for some relief. And then we have the real side experiences that we get and dreams that we get. That's also in a way a relief, or it's like a way to, well, maybe Claudia, maybe it's not for Claudia because she does a lot of work on the real side, but I mean, for a lot of people, it's like a release or a relief for the stress and tensions that build up from just thinking that you're the literal self, the personal self in this world. But then you have, you know, then we're moving through what we're doing here with the presentation. We're moving into the position where, recognition of who you really are. And that's where you get, if you want to call it outside this arena, you know, but it's really just a recognition. You're still, if you have the bodies, you're still within it, but you're not of it. With the real awareness, you can see just a bigger, bigger view of things and how things operate and the processes that they go through. So, you know, Claudia's here too. Claudia, can I ask you, is the real side a relief, or is it you come back even more tired with what you do?
Well, it depends on what activity you want to investigate. I'll use that word. I've always been curious. I want to know why. Why is this happening? Why does strange things happen in our lives that just have no explanation. And so I have been, since childhood, interested in my dreams. Always wanted to know, you know, what was going on and what I could learn from that. And as I grew up, my family in particular were interested in the psychic phenomena. And so we spent time looking at it. I remember growing up as a little girl, my mother would take me to a chapel in my city that after services, they would have, I guess you could say, hold seances and stuff. And as a kid, I was able to access information there. And so we always attended. But it was always late at night for me to stay up past 9 o'clock. And so I lost a lot of stuff. But they would ask me questions, and I could tell them what the answer was, because I'd always have an ability to know things ahead of time. For instance, I would know who was calling us on the telephone, and I would tell my mother, oh, Aunt Mary's going to call us on the phone. And because we were, at that time, a Catholic family, my mother would always get upset with me and say, don't say anything like that. Don't say anything like that. And yet it would be Aunt Mary on the phone in a few minutes. I also would know who was going to die next, which was most disconcerting at times, to find out, some neighbor or relative, I would see their face with the skull over it. And I got used to it after a while as being an occurrence, and it wouldn't frighten me anymore, but I would say, you know, Mrs. Roberts next door is not going to be here with us much longer. And sure enough, Mrs. Roberts next door would succumb to a heart attack or some illness, cancer or whatever, and she would be, we would be at the funeral, and my mother would be looking at me very sternly, don't say a word, and she'd pinch me on my arm just to make sure I got the message. Yes, ma'am. At night, it would be fun to go out, and I had that little ability or charm or whatever you call it, where I could leave the body and go explore. And because I was 8 years old at the time, I knew not to go past our block that we lived on. But I could have fun exploring at night, excuse me, go pet all the dogs and get them barking, which was fun. And then go up and fly over the city. And but I would get back right away because I didn't want to get in trouble with Mother. So it was an ability that started out that way. And as I grew up, I was able to experience different things. I would see people walk through walls, come into the house, come and go. And eventually I could get to the point where I could talk to them, communicate while still being asleep in bed. And finally, one night, I had a terrible nightmare where I saw a soldier. Let's see, when a soldier died on the battlefield, they would put his rifle upside down in the dirt and his helmet on top, marking his spot that he passed on. And one time, I saw one that went for miles, and I was very tired, and I said, I have to go. I have to go home. I have to get up and go to school in a little while. And I couldn't get free. And finally, I knelt down in the dirt of the road, and I said, please, Jesus, please get me out of here. I'm in so much trouble. And all I remember is laying down and falling asleep and then waking up the next morning without I did remember the dream, but I said, I don't want to ever do this again. Take this away. I'm tired of it. And after a few days, I noticed that I didn't have any more nightmares. So things changed. when you go through life with that as adults, sometimes those near-death experiences really give us an idea of something that's different, that is a different plane of existence. Near death, you're there. You heard movie stars, scientists, all types of people having these experiences. So we know that something's going on that others experience the same thing. So, wow, okay, this is an opportunity. Maybe we can learn from this. But because we are so brought up into very, you don't go against your church, or you don't go against your club meetings. You don't tell this information to anybody, even your best friends, because you don't want to jeopardize yourself, your family, your job, whatever. So you keep it to yourself. But there are a lot of people who are silently in the background watching and observing and recording what's going on. They know things are different. Everybody doesn't have the same type of life or background or experience, but boy, they come away with some interesting information. So, yes, we have opportunities to see the other side, the psych realms, as Timothy calls them. Yes, we get to see things that don't make sense. And when it doesn't make sense, you got to think about it. You got to see how it affects you, your life, your family, this planet. We are right now in the midst of a very, very difficult cycle with so much destruction being visited upon the planet that we live on. We don't have really spaceship travel to Mars, and we could live there under difficult situations, but this is our home planet. We've got to stop hurting it. It screams, and this scream of this planet is being heard across many galaxies. That's why there are so many what we call extraterrestrials here. Some extraterrestrials are pretty wonderful. Some are pretty bad. Some come here just for the minerals. They don't care about the humans. We're considered cattle to them. We're bought. We're taken. So many people are taken every day. You hear on the news, thousands of children are abducted, and they're gone. They're just nowhere to be found. Where did they go? Well, they were taken and sold as a meat product to another race of extraterrestrials who consume flesh. We consume flesh too, but we don't cannibalize ourselves. But now, it's becoming more evident. So here's the problem. Do people recognize it, even though they see it? Do they recognize what's going on, that they're being accosted and taken and used elsewhere for somebody else's purpose? Do we just ignore it and shut our eyes to it and say, oh, it doesn't exist, none of that is true, it's just a fallacy? Or do we do something about it? And if we want to do something about it, what do we do? So, the conundrum exists, and we've got to work on it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Claudie. That was great. Wondered how you viewed the these people like Lorian. I'm sorry she's not on today. We'll reschedule her, but how she and others of the UFO an alien community, as they call themselves, they see this in a certain perspective. I mean, it's usually, from what I gather, they're channeling, Archangel Michael or the Pleiadians, or so. They're usually channeling rather than going out on the real side and really investigating. That's just, just how I see it. But I was wondering how you saw it, Claudie, how you saw these people that are supposedly, like channeling the Pleiadians and who are going to come and save the world and do good things and raise the consciousness here on the planet. I mean, what's going on here with all of that? How do you see that?
I think the best way to explain it is this, that humans are very easily deceived. We can be mesmerized just to believe something else. And I use the term mesmerized, so it goes back to the old times, with old-timey times in the 1800s when people channeled and stuff. Channeling was a fun social activity. And there are extraterrestrials who can control our thinking processes by a suggestion. You've seen pictures of operations where doctors are helping people by drilling a hole in their head and inserting an electrical probe into a certain portion of the brain, and the patient will be awake and say, "Oh, I taste strawberries." And they move the probe to another portion of the brain and say, "Oh, I smell roses." And so we know that by stimulating or manipulating cells in our brain, we can be made to believe that we're actually tasting strawberries when we're not. We can be made to believe that we smell roses, but we don't. There's no way. But we're actually convinced that we do. As we go along in life in this modern, quote-unquote, world, we are learning that more and more hypnosis-type effects are used, especially in advertising. You've seen different ads from different companies like Drink Coca-Cola and so on and so forth, splashed during a movie. And then that became against the law, and you can't do that anymore. But it was actually done. Buy popcorn. In the middle of the movie, you get up and go buy popcorn. Okay, as we go along, we're learning, slow but sure, but we're learning. The thing is that you become more aware of this, the more you become susceptible to it, especially when they flash a pretty girl sitting on a car. You know, if you buy this car, you might get a pretty girl too, which was nice. For women, oh, look at this new mixer. If you buy this cake mixer, you'll be the best wife in the world. Oh, okay. So here we are seduced into thinking that our life will be better if we only own this one thing. And to own that one thing, you must have cash money to buy it. So we go to work to earn cash money, to buy our groceries, to buy our gasoline, to put in our car, to buy a house, whatever, to make our lives more comfortable. But the thing is you're caught in a trap. Everybody knows where you're going to be 8 o'clock Monday morning. You're either going to be at work or in school. So you're automatically, I'm going to use the word, condemned to a life of servitude. And as you earn your cash, it's to earn more, to get more in debt, and finally to the point where you're just a zombie, getting up and doing things. Even though you think you're free, well, yes, you're free to go to the grocery store and buy anything you want. You're free to buy the car of your dreams. You're free to buy the house of your dreams. All you have to do is have the cash to pay for it. You know, that'll take 20 or 30 years. It's called a mortgage. And so you go, oh, okay. And after a while, you're just trudging like a soldier down the road, day after day after day. Get up, go to work, come home, eat your dinner, get the kids in bed, do the homework, go to sleep. Tomorrow, get up and do the things. And there's a song, Working for the Weekend. That's what a lot of people are doing after a while. Then you get to be 50, 60, 70 years old. You're very tired, and you don't have the ability to get up and do that day after day anymore. So you better have your Social Security and a retirement fund set up so you will still have groceries and a house and a car to exist in the world. And then if you look at what freedoms do you have, you can breathe the air, but be careful, that air is pretty poisonous. You go and you can eat some food, but some foods don't agree with your body anymore because it's a GMO food. It has been genetically manipulated. The seeds are changed. And then if you drink the water, oh my goodness, even though it comes from your water, municipal water supply, it may not be in very good shape. But we're drinking it and we're surviving, which is the name of the game right now, surviving. So you say, well, what's the point of all this? And then a lot of people say, oh, it's extraterrestrials directing our lives. Yes, they are. They are directing life on this planet. And they are for what reason? Because we want use of you, your body, the minerals that you're standing on in the planet, and use of your brain. A lot of times we don't realize we're hypnotized into believing certain subjects and giving it ultimate adherence or loyalty or whatever you want. As to the suggestion that, oh, God is here to help us, well, it's been, according to one religion, 2,000 years and more and counting, and nobody's showed up yet. And you go, okay, all you have to do is kneel down and beg for whatever you need. I need a healing. I need a job. I need this. And put your $2 in the basket when it's passed on Sunday. Okay, we've done our part. Where's God? Not there. Well, I have to kneel and put $3 in the basket, or maybe $20. And that's really a cut in the budget. Okay, after a while, you don't need to do that anymore. And they say, well, how can this be? How did this happen? It's simple. Extraterrestrials came to this planet, found the gold on it, and decided to exploit it. And they have exploited it. They took the monkeys, the smartest ones that were there, no humans yet, but they altered the DNA and the RNA. They can do that. They had that kind of technology because they're 1,000 years ahead of us. And then they use us for what they want. So here we are trapped in a conundrum again. And you go, well, how can we fight it? We go and we search. We find out what's happening. And we ask, what's the answer? And yes, we ask God. We ask whoever. Sometimes we get an answer. Sometimes we're led to a piece of information that we can use in our lives to make our lives better. And you say, how can you make your life better? Well,
Claudia, is the primary, the big guns, the reptilians, or are there other ETs here that are collecting loosh and bodies and children and gold? And or are they the main ones here, or are there others? Are you there, Claudia? Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Tim?
Yeah, I can hear you. Claudia, are you on mute?
Cool. Oh, maybe. That's it.
Yeah, it's fascinating, all the effects that take place. And then if we have to deal with the cause, it's like we're in a darkness of unknowingness or unawareness. And what's preventing the light from getting through to the masses? There must be something. If it's the aliens or the human mind itself that is blocking the light of awareness about what's really going on. It seems like other things, everybody's paying attention to this worldly stuff and have no idea they're being affected by other stuff. And then even if someone like is offering the new you as a means to get real guidance and a real education. It seems like what is blocking that from getting through to the masses?
Well, thanks, Tim. Is Claudie, are you able to talk, Claudie? Because we couldn't hear you before. Are you still on?
Yes, I'm sorry. My phone turned off.
Okay.
It just stopped.
Okay.
And I'm used to that.
I'm glad it wasn't another alien abduction. Okay, good. You're here.
Well, they control the electronics on this planet. They can do anything they want. One thing for sure, I've interacted with the Orion population, and I don't mean to interrupt Tim's comment, but yes, the Orions, from what I've experienced, are long-lived people. I guess you could say they're not human. They look like lizards, 300 foot tall. And they have very advanced technology. They know how to change the monkey DNA to human DNA thousands of years ago. That's how we came to be. And it's in conflict with what is written in the Bible. You say, well, how can that be? And the answer is simply this, that they created the Bible. They created the idea of a superior being, the God. And they appeared in front of the monkeys, and they told them, bow down and kneel to us and pray to us because we are your gods. And we were deceived. And they would grant favors to the humans who prayed with great sincerity to convince them that they were a god, even though they're ordinary Orions who lived thousands of years. We believed them and have ever since. And it has been kept going and going and going in our history. There are different gods at different epochs of time on the planet Earth. And they say, the people in India believe a certain god. The people in Israel believe a certain god. And the people in Africa believe a certain god. And in China, a different god. And how can that be? Well, it's the same Orion in a different costume telling the people, we are your gods. Bow down and worship us. And so we do. That's all that happens, is that we have been deceived again and again and again. And we don't stop to take into our consciousness that things are different. Everything that happens is a very, I guess you could say, orchestrated event. We orchestrate football games like Kim originally announced. And yes, we have sports activities. And yes, there are great emotional surges happening during these events. Now, one of the things that Orions or any other ship of any other species like the Palladians or the Sirians don't do that much. They're a peaceful kind of people. They don't want to have anything to do with unstable emotional surges. Anyway, the Palladians or the Zeta Reticuli people, they come and they have a way of collecting emotional surges. And they take it and sell it on the galactic market for money. And so they know that war has tremendous emotional surge, which is very valuable to extraterrestrials who seek this type of product from our planet and our people. And they take it and collect it and use it. There's a very good movie called Jupiter Rising where it shows how this has happened. We see things in movies that is information that is being presented to us to look at. Now, it's a movie, and you say, oh, it's just made up. Well, take a look at the movie and step outside of it being a movie and look at it as a documentary, And you'll say, that's different. And it gives you information to I guess you could say, counter. And the song that Tim just sang, you, has been given to us to counter incidences like this. When you sing that song and ask a question, you're given the truth immediately, either in the dream state or in the waking state. If you sing that song 15 minutes before you go to sleep and you ask a particular question, the answer will be given to you in the dream or the next day in a conversation at the coffee shop or eating your lunch or walking down the street and you see a magazine with the answer to your question. Okay, here's a chance. Here's an opportunity. Nothing is being denied you. But you have to get up off the sofa and decide to say new you at some point during your day and see what comes about. Test it. That's the best thing to do. Thank you.
Can I chime in here for a second, guys?
Professor Bob, sure, certainly.
Yeah, Val, I didn't know he had a show until like 20 minutes ago.
Okay, well, you're on now. You got 10 minutes. Go, Bob, go.
Now we're in 22 minutes and 10 seconds. I had to go on to unmute myself so I could talk to you guys. Anyway, I have a question, and, you know, let me go back to talk a little bit about the Pleiadians. I'm not sure that we can just say the Pleiadians and group them all together, and because, you know, I first started getting into the UFO program when my friend from that worked, and I'll even go over this some more on my blog talk radio on Tuesday. I'm planning to bring some more of this up again. But my experience was when this friend of my dad's who worked for the CIA and old school OSS, you know, introduced me to the Pleiadian group that Semyasi belongs to. And the introduction into the existence of UFOs was when I was driving my car home from work. On June 6th of 1991, I was driving home in the evening, right after sunset, dark, moonless night, and I'm driving along the highway, and all of a sudden my car quits running. It just goes deader than a doornail, and I kind of coast to a stop off the shoulder of the road. There's very little traffic along this highway, and I sit there trying to figure out, you know, I open the hood and try to figure out why my battery went flat and why nothing works, and then after about 20 minutes, you know, I'm determined that I'm just going to have to call somebody and get a ride and get my car towed and all that. And I thought, well, I'll try my car one more time before I make the phone call. And I get in the car and hit the ignition key, and all of a sudden the car starts, lights start working, and it's like nothing ever happened. So then I drive up the road, about 10 miles up the road, and all of a sudden I look off to the right side, and there's this big 30-foot diameter green UFO right along the telephone wires and treetops on the right side of the ditch, and it goes right along the top of the telephone lines and then makes about an eighth of a mile or quarter of a mile in front of me. It makes a 90-degree turn and then goes off in the distance for about a mile and then disappears. And I thought, wow, I'd never seen anything like that before. It was a bright green, luminescent color. And then when I got to my destination town, I pulled into a gas station, and this was Woodstock, Illinois. I pulled into the gas station and top off of gas, and while the gas is pumping, I step away from the overhead lights and look up in the sky, and here's a 100-foot diameter craft just hovering about 500 feet above the gas station, and I could clearly see the outline of this UFO, the circular disc. So the next day I called my friend that worked for the CIA, and I said, well, this event happened to me, and it looked like this this craft was moving 1,000 miles an hour, and she says, those are the Pleiadians, the Semyasi flies, and they actually travel at 1,200 miles an hour, but your guess of 1,000 miles an hour was pretty close. So anyway, that was my introduction to the Pleiadians, and at the same time, Semyasi's group of Pleiadians was the ones that were visiting Billy Meyer over in Switzerland and actually landed and talked to him, and Semyasi was one of the female astronauts from the Pleiades. And actually, she stayed around the planet Earth for a while. She dated Dr. Fred Bell, who was Alexander Graham Bell's grandson. And the stuff that I learned from that is fantastic, because his father was killed by the Nazis along the Nile River when Hitler was trying to recover the ancient technologies that was hidden in the temples along the Nile River. And his father was, Alexander Graham Bell's son was involved with that, working on covert operations for the U.S. government. And he was shot and killed in a small boat as he was trying to escape the Nazis along the river. But anyway, to make a long story short, my friend Laura Jean, who worked for the CIA, told me that there's two groups of Pleiadians that are operating here on Earth. And the one group was the one that Semyasi was involved with. And she said that they're a very peaceful, loving group of Pleiadians, and their technology is about 3,000 years advanced of Earth. And then there was another really nasty group of Pleiadians, and that's kind of like what Val was alluding to, who were actually working with the governments trying to enslave humanity, and they were about 300 years advanced of American or human technologies on the planet. And so there's at least those two groups. And one of the interesting things about Area 51, as you know, Area 51 was built by the CIA for the CIA for their UFO operations and their interaction with the reptilians. That's what Area 51 was built for, and run by the CIA for the reptilians. And but anyway, here's my interesting question is the I've been studying a little bit of the ancient history. About 4,000 years ago, when we had all these catastrophes and floods and everything else that took place, 4,000 years ago, the reptilians were trying to rebuild the human race, because a lot of the human race was destroyed during the Atlantis and Lemuria destructive activities, and so. Maybe that was part of Noah's flood. I don't know, but Noah's flood could have been millions of years ago. But anyway, there was so much destruction that took place during the sinking of Atlantis and Lemuria that the Anunnaki and reptilians were rebuilding the Earth's population, and they started rebuilding in an area of the world called Sumeria, and that's where. A lot of the tablets were found about the Anunnaki and Zechariah Sitchin. That's where the tablets were found in what is known as Iraq today. And one of the interesting tablets that they found was the Sumerian king list. And this Sumerian king list listed these Sumerian kings that went back 240,000 years. And the longest living king of Sumeria lived to be 36,000 years. He actually ruled on planet Earth out of Sumeria for 36,000 years. And so what the Anunnaki were doing, they're still doing the when they're doing the genetic engineering and that sort of thing. But I think that what may have happened in more recent times, and it's really hard to put a date on anything because the Anunnaki and all them can change time and they can convert everything. Somehow or another, I think the Anunnaki got together with the the lower group of Pleiadians and took their DNA and mixed it with the DNA of the reptilians, and they actually created a near perfect human form of the reptilians, and they had a very balanced DNA matched to where the reptilians were able to create a race of reptilians with shape-shifting capabilities where they could actually move into all the high levels of government in every country on the earth if they wanted to, and they would mingle among the humans, and as they did, they would shape-shift into human form, and nobody would know the better of it. And so that's where the blue bloods come from, and they're basically reptilians like the royal family of Europe and George Bush Senior, who after he died he went back into his old reptilian form on the astral plane. Sandy went to look at him. He's pretty hideous, right, dear? Yeah, Sandy says he's really hideous looking in his reptilian form. But anyway, we know about that, and I think that's kind of a mix between the lower bad human-looking Pleiadians and the reptilians, and that's how they got control of the planets by putting these human beings and the blue bloods to work at the human level. And I'm going to talk more about how the Nazis and George Bush happened to be being a shape-shifting reptilian, how he came from Germany. He was actually born in Europe, and he was good friends of Hitler and Mengele and Bormann and the Bush family. They were all buddy buddies. And now that we know that George Bush and W and all them are shape-shifting reptilians, it kind of puts an interesting twist in the control on this planet today. So, Claudia, can you comment on what I'm saying? Does any of that make sense to you?
Oh, wow. That's a history lesson. Perfect. Just very, very informative. When somebody does research like that and brings us forward, this opens up our consciousness to truth in a different form. We have truth being brought out in the quote-unquote ET world. Things are being said publicly that are giving information to regular humans who are interested in listening. And there are more and more people becoming interested in what's being said. And yes, they do poo-poo it and say, oh, that's just, I listen to it for entertainment purposes only. Well, okay, good. Entertainment purposes can also bring out information. And so when these people listen, they tell somebody else, oh, I heard the funniest thing on the internet. And then we say, oh, you know, it's on the internet. So it's not real. It's not true. Well, you can slip a lot of truth in it's not real and it's not true by saying it. Because once you say it and you publish it and you let it out to others, you raise the consciousness, the subconsciousness of the people on earth. It helps them get more information and enlightenment, if I may say so. So thank you, Bob. This Professor Bob, this is just fabulous.
You know, for any of our listeners that want to see a UFO, have their own private UFO experience, one of the things that the Semyasi and her group of Pleiadians did is they had these beam ships that they would fly around in the Earth's atmosphere. And unbeknownst to a lot of people, and I just discovered this just like 6 months or a year ago, I love to watch these old Western movies. And one of my favorite movies was Once Upon a Time in the West with Charles Bronson and Henry Fonda and it's Claudio Cardinal, and I don't know anybody familiar with that Western movie. Well, anyway, if you want to have a Pleiadian UFO experience, watch that movie. And unbeknownst to the photographers and even the editors that edited the movie didn't even realize this, but during one of the scenes, Semyasi and her group of Pleiadians show up in a beam ship, and during the scene, they uncloak their craft right in the background of one of the scenes for about 2 seconds, and then recloak again right in the middle of this movie. And where, if you want to go down to the someplace and rent a movie or watch it on Netflix, you have to watch the scene. I don't know if you know about the movie, but in the beginning of the movie, a bunch of people were murdered, and then at the burial of this guy that Claudia Cardinale was supposed to be married at his gravesite, they got a minister standing there, and Claudia's there at his gravesite, and they're burying him. And Claudia Cardinale's about ready to throw some dust into the grave, you know, as the preacher is making his final comments. And right by the head of the, in the background, with the mountains in the background next to the preacher's head, you'll see the beam ship uncloaked for about 2 seconds. So if you rent the video, you can play it back, you know, over and over until you can slow-mo it, and then you can see it. That's one of the beam ships that Semyasi used to visit Billy Meyer over in Switzerland. So there you can have your own real experience of what it's like to have a UFO experience in your life if you've never seen one before. So I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, I don't know how much time you have, Al, but I have a question that I just have to have an answer for, and I don't have the answer, and maybe you have the answer, or maybe Claudia has the answer, but who in the world are Lucifer and who is Satan, and how do they fit in the scheme of things?
Well, Claudia may know that, or Tim. You want to go try for that one?
This is Quadi in Texas. I'm giving it a shot. Lucifer was the brightest angel, quote unquote, from biblical times, and was interfering in a lot of the projects of other extraterrestrials on the planet. So the way to get rid of Lucifer was to label him as Satan, an evil entity and the cause of all of our problems on the planet Earth. So Lucifer was doing good for a while, but then he got shot down in flames, so to speak, and labeled that. So then he was able to save himself by producing miracles, quote unquote. But it became a battle between good and evil, which is what they fit right into the Bible stories that were foisted upon the population at the time. Remember, these extraterrestrials live for thousands of years and have acquired information of how to manipulate us. We're just a herd of cattle on this planet and a meat product to be sold on the open market, galactic market. We're here to be collected, and the most wonderful thing they can collect from us is emotional energy and soul. It is used as drug, just like we use drugs here. Well, it's used as a drug on the other side. Thank you.
Well, so the question is, you know, as I've been studying David Icke's writings, it says that the Illuminati are not worshiping Satan, but in the very end times, and I'll bring this out in a lot more detail on Tuesday on my blog radio talk show. It says that they are going to be worshiping Lucifer, and they're going to be doing the most diabolical things that you can imagine as they worship Lucifer, because they're following what Lucifer has set up for people on this planet. All the evil that you can imagine is all being attributed to Lucifer. And that was my original thinking until Sandy told me that somebody said Lucifer was a good guy today. And that's, I'm having a hard time, you know, figuring out, you know, are Satan and Lucifer two different beings? I always thought it was the same being. You know, the Bible says they're the same being, but how can one be a good guy and one the bad guy, you know? So that's where I'm having trouble with figuring out how can Lucifer be a good guy when he's still being worshipped and being followed to do all these evil things.
Well, as I said before, these different extraterrestrials can live thousands of years. Now, all you have to do to be good and bad at the exact same instant of time is wear a different costume. You have the costume of love that you put on and appear before somebody, and they think you, oh, you're God, you're wonderful, you're just absolutely beautiful. That's why Lucifer was called the being of light. Then you want somebody who's evil to fight against. Well, you just take that white coat, light coat off and put on a evil, dark, sinister red coat and put some horns on your head and wear some shoes that look like cloven hooves and maybe put a tail on your bottom or something and appear before some humans and do something evil like kill a child or something like that or burn a cat. Then you're immediately Satan. It's easy to play the same role, be the same person. All you do is change your costume and appear before someone and immediately announce, I am Satan, or, you know, I'm somebody evil, and do an evil act. You're immediately recognized. Whereas you put on a coat of light and you shine, put a spotlight behind you or something, and you shine and you do something wonderful like make a flower bloom. They know how to do this instantly. You are immediately recognized as a being of light. So you can be the same person. You just play the game different, a different role for whatever you need done.
Yeah, well, I get that, and that's exactly the way I thought it was. But when Sandy said that Lucifer was really a good guy and he got blamed for things he never really did, I'm kind of confused by all that.
Well, yes, he was a good guy. Good guys can do bad things, too. And I don't mean in the sense that, oh, yeah, he's a good guy and he's one separate entity. He's a good guy and a bad guy at the same time. And he does
essentially, he's a bad guy that transformed himself into an angel of light for certain reasons, but he's really a bad guy behind the scenes, right?
If it suits his purpose, it's whatever is needed at the moment. You can't have a drama or a movie with a drama movie without a good and a bad. You must have both so that people can see them. It's very easy to deceive us humans. You say, why would a good guy burn a cat? Well, at the moment, to convince the crowd. And have them worship them and not fall out of line alignment. We have only certain freedoms that we can use, and yet we are being continually instructed with these freedoms that this is the right thing to do, whereas we have evil on this planet done by other persons because they don't care. They are bored. They don't have anything else of excitement. You know that when bad gangs get together in a neighborhood and convince children, it's more fun to be in the bad gang than it is to be with the goody two-shoes going to church. That's human society as we know it on the basic level. But we're getting smarter every day, and some kids are getting the idea that we have been lied to. And so they're starting to look at everything with a very callous eye. I asked my granddaughter the other day about the news when fake news came out. She said, oh, yeah, all the news is fake. Don't you get it? And I went, well, yeah. That's why I was asking you, you know, my 15-year-old. It's fake. What about this? Oh, it's fake. Everything is fake. And I go, ooh, this is really sad to hear. I'm sorry.
She's waking up, huh?
Yeah. The children are way ahead of us. They're you can't liken them. They play video games to learn. I know it's mesmerizing, and I know it's not the best, but they're learning. Every time they play, my son told me, he said, oh, yeah, all the video games have changed from killing Nazis to killing terrorists. I said, yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, all the news out. There are no more Nazi killings. There are terrorist killings. You can still kill somebody. We'll just change them from Nazi to terrorist.
Well, that's the war on terror, yeah.
Yes, it's very easy to sell a new video game if you're killing a terrorist. See what I mean? How easily we're deceived?
Thank you, Claudia. You know why our government doesn't want to have anything to do with disclosure of the aliens?
Because
they are the aliens.
They want to keep it for themselves.
They are the aliens. They don't want to reveal themselves.
Yes. Right.
And on my show on Tuesday, I'm going to reveal something else. Did you know? You know, like, Claudia, you do such a wonderful job of explaining this to everybody. But on Tuesday, I'm going to say, welcome to Jurassic Park in reverse. In the movie Jurassic Park, the humans re-DNA'd the reptiles into existence. And then the reptiles went kind of crazy. You had all those T-Rexes that were trying to eat the humans and all that. But actually, planet Earth is Jurassic Park, except it's the reptilians that created the humans to be farmed rather than the humans creating the reptiles. So, everybody, welcome to Jurassic Park in reverse.
Yo.
I have a question. when the reptilians come to the earth in this place called time and space, how does that have anything to do with our real self? Because what I'm aware of is this is all an illusion. This is Maya. This physical realm is not real. It's just a comparison to what is real. So how does that affect when the reptilians turn the monkeys into us humans, how does that have anything to do with the real self? And because there's no time and space in the real universes.
I have one simple answer for that. And you ever watch Star Trek The Next Generation? You ever watch that series?
I'm not sure.
Well, in that series, they have on the Starship Enterprise, and I'm sure all the other starships had it, they had what was called a holodeck. And a holodeck, you know, as you know, if those spacecraft are traveling, you know, for months or years at a time off into different star systems and planets and everything, you know, as you're buzzing across through space, it gets really, really boring. So the engineers that created the Enterprise spaceship created what was a holodeck. And what the holodeck was, it was a place where where you could program anything that you wanted to have an experience. And go back and watch some of the movies where they're actually going on the holodeck. And so let's say you're an engineer in engineering, and you want to experience sitting on the coastline, you know, late afternoon sunset, watch the waves roll in and watch the beautiful girls walk by on the beach. Well, you write a program and you go on into this holodeck, which is a room like the size of a basketball court, and you get in there and you say, computer, start program, whatever it is, and all of a sudden, bang, you're in a holographic simulation of exactly what you programmed. You can program whatever you want. You can program to be in different places, different experiences. So you could be there, you know, on an ocean, or you could be doing practically anything that you wanted, whatever you wanted to experience. And so, you know, we're a lot like that here, I think. I mean, this is just one idea that I have, is we're like crew members of the Starship Enterprise, and we've set up a program that we've created for ourselves on a holodeck in a holographic simulation, and we've set up, this is the experience that we want to live, and we get onto the computer and we tell the computer start program. But what's happened was we get so engrossed in our program that we forget that we're officers of the Starship Enterprise, and we get so engrossed that we forget that when we're done to tell the computer, okay, end simulation and go back into being a crew member. We forget that, and here we are. We're lost in this holographic simulation, but we forgot who we are or where we came from. And that's where the real guys come in. The real guys have come in, and they're saying, "Hey, you know, hey Tim or Bob or whatever, you know, you're in the simulation, but you forgot where you are. But we, if you sing new you." We will show you the way back out of this hologram and get you back on board the ship again. All right, so how's that sound for like a comparison?
Excellent. I have one to offer. Is that the movie Matrix? They
yes.
show everything as a matrix, a computer simulation, but we're caught in the trap of it, believing it being real. And so, yes, we can have everything we want in our lives. All we have to do is know where it's coming from. Thank you.
Well, I guess that's let's kind of end it here. I guess it's almost down an hour and a half. I just wanted to share something that the supporters of this show, which are the Worldwide Educators, are doing or are about. I'll just read a little paragraph here, and then we can all sing the new you to end it. We, Worldwide Environment Educators, support the all-natural environment, supporting everyone. Our real focus is always with what is naturally occurring on this planet Earth. It is the people that must save the natural environment. We, Worldwide Environment Educators, are into everything that makes sense with being free with the whole of life. There are no restrictions with the all-natural environment in what could be thought of as the natural order of things when there is no interference involved. With what has taken place over many decades of interference with the natural environment, the natural order of things is not the same. And this is why we are here doing now something wonderful for everyone. So part of what we're doing is presenting the new you, so everybody listening can try this before bed or during the day, and you'll get a sample of each one of us doing the new you and how it sounds, and you can do it too. So I'll start it with new you. Claudie?
New you.
Professor Bob?
New you.
And Tim.
New you, you, you.
Thanks again, everybody. This was the Creative Literal Side Show, episode 4, without our special guest, DeLorean. who will be with us another week. And too bad she missed this, because there's a lot. There was a lot here with what was gone over. So thanks everybody for contributing. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Val.
Okay.
Yep.
Bye.
See you.